Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Folks from this base have done exactly what they were trained to do in the war against these killers and thugs. You have taken the battle of the terrorists overseas, so we do not have to face them here in the United States.
Fighting for those who fight for our freedom. You're listening to Warrior Talk with G.I. Jen, only on Warrior Talk Radio.
Welcome to the family. Hey, is that something to say? Only time will alter your.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Warrior Talk Radio. I am your host, G.I. Jen, and it is a fantastic February 23rd, lovely Tuesday evening. Just has been quite lovely out in Arizona lately. We have a great show planned for you this evening. Retired Senior Chief Tom Shea on. Tom spent quite a bit of time on the team, so he is now the CEO of Adamantine Alliance, and that is a unique leadership and demanding human performance training organization. They look at things like the five pyramids of human performance and the training of performance in the margin. Really great guy. He's also the author of the national best-selling book, Unbreakable, A Navy SEAL's Way of Life.
Fighting for those who fight for our freedom. Warrior Talk with G.I. Jen on Warrior Talk Radio.
There are lots of things you can spend your tax refund on, but one thing you don't have to spend it on? A new smartphone. Switch to MetroPCS now and get not one, but two free 4G LTE smartphones for brands like Samsung and LG. Plus, you're on T-Mobile's blazing fast nationwide 4G LTE network. Hurry, switch to MetroPCS and get two free smartphones after instant rebate. One heck of a deal, only at MetroPCS. Limited time offer. Sales tax not included in phone price. Coverage and services not available everywhere. See store for details and terms and conditions.
This is EJ Skullcrusher Snyder, three-time legend of Naked and Afraid. You're listening to Warrior Talk Radio with G.I. Jen. Yeah!
We're back, and with us is Tom Shea. Tom, how are you doing?
Good, hey. Thanks for having me, Jen.
Not a problem. Love having you on. So, Tom, why don't you tell our guests just a little bit about who you are and a little bit about your military history?
Yeah, well, my name's Tom Shea. I retired 2 years ago after 23 years of being in the SEAL teams. And, yeah, I was a SEAL Team 2 for quite some time, and then I was a SEAL instructor for 3 years. From 2001 to 2004, which was a fun time to be an instructor because it was real at that point.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then I went to SEAL Team 7 for, I think, 5.5, 6 years. And then I culminated my career with I was in charge of the SEAL Sniper course for 2 years, and then I was in charge of research and development.
Oh, very cool. I imagine that's probably got to be a pretty fun job to research and develop all the cool gear that you guys get.
Yeah, you get to see all the stuff that's way ahead of what everybody else in the world sees. But you also get to see the drama behind how things actually go from thought to application.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun simply because you realize that great technology takes, somebody to drive it past the thought to the application.
Oh, I'm sure. And when you're coming up with things, I can imagine, I always picture like the 007 guy, like the little techie guy that's always coming up with like really cool things like the exploding pen. And I imagine that's kind of a little bit what it's like.
Well, it's more, I think that's probably a little bit what it's like, but the SEALs, what they do is they kind of laugh at the techie guy and say, hey, that's never going to work, so just stop,
Well, that sounds really interesting. And so you've served all this time on, in the teams, and you got out recently, and what have you been doing since you've been out?
I think a lot of people call it retirement, and all my friends around here call it graduation. It's so hard to go from, you know, being at the front, leading edge of something and then going to zero. So I developed a company where I go around the nation talking about high-level performance and teaching high-level, already performing at a high-level level, if you will, executives to take their company, you know, instead of the 10% gain each year, it's we play at a different space called we're interested in twice the amount of production out of people. And so it's an interesting place to be in, and it's grown pretty big in the past 2 years, and it's fun.
Sounds fun. And, you know, one of the things that I've seen a lot from, you know, at least in my circle of friends, which are all pretty much, you know, the soft background, they get out and that drive is still there. I mean, you know, just because you're leaving the military doesn't mean that you're not still that, like, high performance, high level, you know, have certain expectations of yourself. And they get out, and a lot of them have gone into either, you know, motivational speaking or, you know, training and development to get, like you were saying, like the different corporations up and to a higher mm-hmm. level of performance. And I think that that's so interesting because, you know, the guys get out and they're still continuing on that mission of drive and purpose and performance. And I've always found that interesting. Is there a reason why this particular avenue was appealing to you?
Well, that's an interesting question. I kind of think there's when team guys get out, I think they fall into three categories. One is I'm done and I don't ever want to do anything with anybody or for anybody else ever again. So they totally
yeah.
retire and go off the grid. And then I think the middle section are the people who still want to work, but they don't want to stay at the high level. And then there's the third section where they just want to keep challenging themselves and operate and function with people that are also wanting to take things to the next level. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I see a lot of team guys floundering when they get out because they're used to, you know, people living in integrity constantly and pushing themselves and pushing the team and a lot of things that they had in this while in the teams. It's very hard to recapture when you get out.
Yeah,
so
I can imagine.
It was, you know, I didn't think I would be doing this, and oddly how I got to this place, I guess, is I had been asked by my wife to write down what I wanted to pass on to my kids in case I died in combat.
Oh, wow.
And it became a book just by happenstance. And then we, you know, nobody really knows how to, you know, write or publish a book. At least SEALs don't know that. And so... And I certainly didn't know anything about it. So we originally printed 5 copies, and then it started going viral. And after 2 years, it's done pretty well as a book. And it had we had no intent to be public. And that was the hardest thing for me to begin to look at, is going from a very private life to being, you know, under the public scrutiny. And, you know, you think you have friends and enemies, and then you go public, and then you have clearly defined friends and enemies when that happens.
Yeah, I bet.
And,
I bet.
And then, you know, I, it's not difficult speaking in public, but you're going from, you know, a shadowy type person to being in front of people and talking openly as much as you can about what it was like to, you know, be a team guy and what that difference that made to, or it can make to businesses. That was the hardest frame up for me, was how to do that. And but yeah, it's been quite a journey.
I imagine. Now, what is the name of the book?
The book is titled Unbreakable, A Navy SEAL's Way of Life.
Very cool. And where can people go if they want to read it?
It's everywhere. It's in Barnes & Noble and Amazon and Books A Million. And I sold the copyright to a company called, or a publishing house called Little Brown Company.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of them before.
Yeah, and that was an awesome professional experience. We launched it ourselves 2 years ago, and then this last summer I sold it to Little Brown, and they relaunched it in October. And the huge learning curve, especially when you don't know anything.
Yeah. Now, you were saying that your wife kind of inspired you to write this book by, I mean, I can imagine, you know, my ex was 21 years special forces. So, you know, mm-hmm. he spent a lot of time in some pretty scary places. And I can assume that, you know, that's got to be kind of a sobering thought to sit down and write, you know, to your kids or to your future children or to your grandchildren, you know, whoever you're writing it for, the lessons that you want to teach them or instill in them if something should happen to you. I mean, was that like a fairly sobering experience for you?
I don't know if I'd call it sobering. It was more the fact that I don't come from a writing background, and the request for me to write was, the act of sitting down and writing was miserable for me.
Oh.
A lot of people like to write, but I don't necessarily like to.
Right.
So it was, while I was in charge of a SEAL platoon over in Afghanistan in 2009, and it was a very dangerous area.
Yeah.
And I wasn't very sure that we were all going to make it. And Stacy wasn't clear that we were going to make it. And we have three kids. And she goes, hey, you know, if you don't come back, I'm not going to be able to tell them anything of value about you or about what you're doing or about things that they're going to look forward to in their life. And so some of the stuff was written, you know, in mud and blood and pencil and pen and typewritten, and some of it was emails. But then I came back, so there was no reason to compile it all. And Stacy ended up sharing it with a friend, and then the friend encouraged me to just put it down and make it coherent. And that happened before I even retired, and then we sat on this manuscript for quite some time. And I got another mentor who said, hey, why don't you just try to get a publishing house to pick it up? And everybody didn't want it. You know, you hear no about 1,000 times in business anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finally just said, let's just pay for it and got it printed up. And then there's the rest of the story, you know?
Yeah. What an incredible gift to be able to give to your children when they get older. Are they at the age where they can read and understand what you're talking about in the book?
Yeah, my oldest is 18, and she just got accepted to West Point, so she can definitely read it.
Yeah.
And my middle boy is 15. And he's read it several times. You never know how a ninth grader processes things, but he has read it. And he says, Dad, you use a lot of foul language. And I'm like, I don't remember using that. But and my youngest is 9, and you know, he colors in the book. So,
Well, I can imagine that's, you know, some pretty important and valuable lessons that you impart on your kids in that book. I'm certainly looking forward to reading it. I'm going to go download it when I get out of the interview. But I'm excited to read it. And what has your experience been since the book has been written and published and it's out there? I mean, have you gotten any feedback from the guys that you were on the teams with?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's always good and bad feedback. You know, hey, why are you going public? And I had to get it vetted through SOCOM anyway.
Right.
And then some like it and some don't, and some appreciate it. And, you know, some don't. But the feedback from the people that have actually read it, in the greater, community, so to speak, meaning, the civilian community, has been so profound that we've built a business out of some of the teachings of the book, which I think is tremendous.
Yeah. So now what is the business and what does the business do?
Yeah, the business is called Adamantine Alliance, and I just had to give it a name, so that's the name. And I teach clients, private clients, one at a time, and they're usually in the C-suite, to master five things in their life: physical, intellectual, wealth, relationship, and spiritual mastery, if you want to call it that.
Wow.
And it takes about 6 months to get through. And we have inadvertently, just by working with the leaders, the company just blooms. And we grew a company from 5 to 15 million in 6 months by just working with the CEO. Which
that's incredible.
I didn't anticipate that at all. So now I don't even... I don't necessarily market the company because it's all word of mouth.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great way to grow.
Oh, absolutely.
And but it's I just got back yesterday from a client in Denver, and it takes all day, and we do 7 separate trainings that last 8 to 10 hours each time we meet. They're very intense, and some of it's physical and some of it's, experiential based, where you have to learn it and then go do it and apply it. And it's phenomenal work. I love it.
That's amazing. Now, do you primarily work with, corporations and stuff, or if an individual was interested in maybe a tailored program, would you be able to do something like that, or is it specifically for corporations?
Well, it's not for corporations. It's for individuals.
Okay.
And for some reason, and it wasn't intended this way, but for some reason, 90% of our clients are CEOs.
Yeah.
And I have 2 professional athletes, and then 2 that are not necessarily at the C level, but high-level salespeople that want to take their game to the next level. And, yes, it's individual-based. It's not in a big corporate setting. And it's tailored. It has a structure, but it's tailored to the needs of the individual.
That's amazing. And you said that you were touching on these 5 different areas of mastery. I can imagine that, as a SEAL, you're probably in peak physical performance. You'd have to be, at least fairly intelligent, especially with you being
an instructor. That's
debatable. Well, I'm going to leave that one alone. But I mean, the guys that I talk to that are in special operations in the special operations community, or have since retired from that community, they're all pretty intelligent guys, forward thinking, able to think outside of the box. Many of them have several languages, so I can kind of see where you would be, especially being an instructor and having gone through all of the training that you've gone through, and then being charged with imparting that information and experience on, the up and coming guys. I can imagine being in the peak mental condition as well. But then you talk about, the other 3 areas. How would one go about mastering those areas? Just a brief overview. I don't want to give away your package.
No, yeah. I wish I could give it away in 5 minutes. I just haven't found a way to do that. So how I frame it up, the core of all mastery is your ability to take something from an idea to having it show up in the world. To me, that's what I say mastery is, as opposed to just repetitively doing one thing over and over and over and over and over again. That, you know, that's, you know, monkey training, so to speak. So if you understand, that's how I say that it's framed up. So if you're able to have an idea of how to, of what you're up to, and then how to find a way to measure that in the real world, once you can take that leap from, okay, that's a great idea, and then measure it, you are going to attain a higher level just inherently.
Yeah.
And, you know, in physical, one of the clients went from not running to running an ultra marathon in 3 months.
That's amazing.
And the intent is not to be physical. It's just you have to do something that you think is impossible in all five categories, and then you have to accomplish it. And that's
right.
That's what we do as a business, is take people from, okay, boy, I'd love to do that. Okay, well, let's do it. And you know, so that happens in physical and wealth, how to, you know, they want to triple their, you know, their employees or their revenue. So we find a way to measure that, and then we use all of our resources and all of our connections to get that from an idea and to fruition in a relatively short amount of time. And then, you know, how do you measure that spiritually? I'll keep that as a secret.
So what you're doing is you're asking your clients to set goals in each one of these areas that they feel are unattainable, and then you guys formulate a plan and put that plan into action to meet those goals, meet or exceed those goals. That's incredible. That's really, really neat. And I can see where, you know, people, if they have the means to do that, to participate in a program like that, that would be so beneficial. Can you touch on, like, I don't want to, like, get too detailed, but can you touch on what something like that would cost for the average person?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, I'm not hiding it at all. It's, for all the training cumulatively, so the total is $25,000 for 6 months.
That's
then I have higher level training. No, it's not that bad. It's reasonable. And nobody balks at the cost. I probably should increase it because nobody says no. But I cap it off where I can only do 10 at a time.
Yeah.
Without killing myself and the family, and and you know, I don't want to travel every day of the month like I did as a SEAL.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever considered for the average person that, you know, maybe doesn't have, you know, the funding that a pro athlete or a CEO would have? Have you ever considered doing like a smaller scale, like a book with an action plan in it, or, you know, something that like,
I have. That's a lot of people are asking for that.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of time. It still costs, not costs, but it takes time to produce that.
Right.
And you know, the current work that we're in is so involved and exciting that I have to go, you know, do I want to take from one and give to the other?
Right.
I tried hiring somebody to come in and write it, and it was more a pain in the butt to do it that way. I don't. Maybe it's me. I don't know. We're trying to tackle the idea of how do we scale it.
Right.
So that more people can be involved and more people can benefit from it. And, you know, I think all people try to figure out how to work less and get more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for me, I want to try to be the best that I can be, and trying to figure out, like, how do you how do you set a goal to be the best that you can be? I mean, that's where I struggle. It's like, okay, well, what are the things that I would consider success in this mm-hmm. business? You know, what is success in my philanthropic work? You know, so I try mm-hmm. to kind of figure that stuff out, and then I do like the little vision boards and stuff. And, you know, sometimes it works really well, but I think that it would be, it's kind of like working out for me. Like, I work out, but I work out 10 times harder when I have a trainer there that is
always
expecting me to show up and expecting me to, you know, attain certain levels and kind of push me. So I can imagine where it would be so much, I don't want to say easier, but it would press people more to drive on or to push through some of their obstacles if they have someone like you kind of rooting them on.
Yeah, I think a guided process is necessary. I don't think anybody can accomplish anything by themselves, and I learned that in blood and the teams.
Yeah.
You have to do something with somebody else. But we are currently, you know, you asked the question, you know, what are we doing to, you know, give this technology or help other people get this technology? Is we're the 13 lessons that are in the book, we have now written them down in a guided process, and we're going to launch it on our website, I think within the next month.
Oh,
so
very
that people
nice.
Can go through a guided, instead of the intensive one-on-one, it's kind of more of self-paced. You know, do this until it gets done, and then graduate to the next lesson, and then the next, and that's the intent of it anyway.
Well, and what website is that? Where's the website so people can go check that out when it comes out?
Yeah, it's the company's name, Adamantine Alliance, Adamantine Alliance.com. And, or I guess you could probably search my name and it'll find it somehow. And everybody cusses me for making a name that nobody can spell. But, you know, it's there now. It's not there now, but it will be in the next month. And,
okay.
Yeah, and we're opening up another avenue of, I guess I would, we're calling it Unbreakable TV, where we're getting very successful people around a round table and talking openly about what it has taken them to be successful in their life. Instead of, you know, going to get a PhD in business, we're bringing in the top people that in business or athletics or coaching, and then having an hour-long discussion about, you know, success and performance and failure and the common theme that, because we've been doing this ourselves for 2 years. A friend of mine have been and I've been doing it. I'm like, well, why don't we just share this with everybody else?
Right.
Because I get more out of that listening to, you know, high-level professional football coaches around a dinner table going, oh, my gosh, I could do that. If I just
yeah.
don't give up, I could probably find that solution. And you know, you probably heard that some of the best ideas in the world are either around a bar and a beer, you know.
Yep, yep.
And so, yeah, we're going to provide that to, yeah, so, yeah.
Well, that is amazing. And you know, it's so true what you said, because I found just in talking to the people that I get to engage with through the show, you know, I've learned so much from their experiences of what to do and what not to do. And inevitably, I find more success with listening to their failures. Like, these are the things that I tried
oh, yeah.
that didn't work. And this is what I tried that did work. And it kind of, you know, if you're listening and you really put that into practice, a lot of times it helps you to avoid some of the mistakes that they made, that you would naturally go down that path because that's just the natural next step. And avoiding those issues, I could see, be incredibly valuable.
Yeah. And what I talk about now on, you know, I guess, the speaker circuit, whatever that means, but in my keynote presentations, something that became really resounding is the theme of what your life would be like if you never quit. You know,
yeah.
having learned that as a SEAL, the premise of SEAL training if you don't quit, possibilities come up.
Right.
So, you know, and what if you actually learned how not to quit on yourself or your family or your business or difficult times, that maybe that is the key to success? Because there's a lot of smart people that can't tie their shoes, and there's a lot of smart people that can't make money.
Right.
But the common theme that I've seen both in the teams and then now out is successful people are the ones that just go one more step.
Right.
And
a lot
they
of
find a way.
That.
They're not intelligent. They didn't necessarily have the money. They risk a lot, and they just find a solution in the middle of all the chaos out there. That all you have to do is just, oh my gosh, just keep going.
Yeah. Well, and so many people, when they have that first failure, they give up. And
they don't really realize
that failure is just, it's just a life lesson, and it's one step closer to being a success. So if you don't give up, you know, a lot of people that I know who have started businesses that, you know, maybe the business wasn't successful within 6 months or 8 months or a year, and so they give up. And it's like, but, you know, it takes an average of, like, I think they said somewhere between 2 to 5 years. And if you can make it that long, then that's when you start to see your business flourish. And so many people are, and I think that is, it's something about, you know, the world today where you expect to have immediate results. And, you know, it's just such a, I don't even know, I call it squirrel moments, where people are like, okay, this is a great idea. I'm really going to push it. And if it doesn't immediately, you know, give them the results that they want, there's the next business idea that goes by, and, you know, the squirrel. So then they're over here.
Then they quit
here.
Again. Yeah.
So that's so important.
One of my close friends that's a retired SEAL, and, you know, he's now national, you know, on the national scene, a guy named Jocko Willink, who has a book out called, I think it's called Extreme Ownership. And so that's not a spot for his book, but, yeah, I would definitely read it. But I heard him talk the other day, and he frames it up differently than I do, and maybe this will, you know, hit your listeners. Is, you know, and okay, so you're in pain. So okay, it didn't work. Good. It didn't work. Get back at it. Try it again. Start over. Just don't give up.
Yeah.
Good. You know, your kids are sick. Good. Learn from it. What can you do now? You know, you're out of ammo. Good.
Yeah.
Find a solution. Sit there. You know, and that resounding theme is what I call the 15% of the people in the world are going to be successful in the middle of the desert. They're going to find water somehow.
Yeah.
And the other 85%, the only differentiating factor isn't knowledge or genetic coding or anything like that. It's the other 85% just quit.
Yeah.
And I saw that in SEAL training. That's the same percentage. 15% of the people make it. And you look at the graduating people and you're like, gosh, what? He doesn't look like him. They don't all look the same. All different backgrounds. The only factor is that they just didn't quit. And it's the same thing in the business community. You can't look at somebody and say, oh, he's a successful business person or she's a successful business person. The only differentiating factor is they found a solution when that other person didn't.
Yeah. Well, and I've seen through, you know, just my interactions with small business owners that eventually became big business owners is, you know, there was never, you know, it wasn't just that this guy went to this, you know, brilliant business university. Most of the people that I know that are really, really successful and doing very well for themselves were not necessarily overly educated or, you know, anything special. except for the fact that, like you said, they didn't quit. They would run mm-hmm. into an issue, or they would have a failure, and they would learn from that failure and take the, what they learned and apply it to their next effort. Maybe it was mm-hmm. just, you know, changing some things up about the idea that they had, or maybe it was realizing that that wasn't the path that they were passionate about, but this area is, and that passion kept them going through the difficult times. But yeah. a lot of those business owners that I know were, you know, they graduated from high school. Some were even, you know, high school dropouts. And it's because they did not give up. They just kept at it and kept at it. And I mean, I would say mm-hmm. that is absolutely the most important quality that you have to have as a business owner, is just keep pushing through.
And that can be learned. You know, I don't know if I can learn nuclear fusion. You know what I mean? I tried that and I failed out. So I don't know if certain things, everybody can learn certain things.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For whatever reason, not everybody can learn at a high capacity. You know, not everybody has 180 IQ. Not everybody has a photographic memory. But everybody can learn not to quit.
Right. And it was...
But nobody even tries to learn not to quit. They try to learn information.
Well, one of the things you had mentioned about, you know, the SEAL teams, and I know that this is pretty much the same for the guys that I know that went through selection and special forces, it wasn't that they were necessarily the most physically fit or the biggest guy or the fastest guy. It was just the awareness that if they could mentally push through the pain and push mm-hmm. through, you know, they run into their walls and, mm-hmm. and they were able to push through those walls. That's what got them through, and the drive and the realization that you can't quit, because if you quit, mm-hmm. that's the end. Not like you get, like, mm-hmm. you know, a whole bunch of chances.
It's
so
over.
Yeah. It's like, ring the bell, you're gone, bye. And that I've always found fascinating, because, you know, I know some of the guys that are, like, you know, huge, like Oz, who's just a giant human being. Mm-hmm. And then my friend KJ, who's, like, you know, about my size, but extremely physically fit. And, you know, they're all different shapes and sizes and different backgrounds. But all of them just had that drive, that it was just so important to them not give up.
Yeah, you know, so, not giving up also leads to then you can practice more. Like you were saying, you know, when you work out, somebody mm-hmm. who's not going to give up and has learned not to give up, they're going to practice far more than the other person. And that immediately will put you at a higher level. Obviously, practice is everything. And, you know, there's an old Chinese saying that says, don't make a decision until you've done something 10,000 times.
Yeah.
Who in the United States or anywhere says, okay, I'm going to do this 10,000 times before I decide if it's right or wrong. Very few people do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw, the things I saw in the SEAL community, you know, I was probably middle of the road. I wasn't good at anything. I was a pretty good shot, but I was only a good shot because I had to practice more than anybody else. But I saw guys do things that you're like, oh, my gosh. You know, one of my friends broke the Guinness World Book of Records of pull-ups in 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
And it's not – it's like I think he did 4,800 pull-ups. And here, you know, everybody else struggles to get 10. And he did 4,800. And I saw a guy in training as a student when I was an instructor. I made a bet with the class that, you know, I think I was tired of doing PT at 3 o'clock in the morning as an instructor. And I said, hey, if anybody can do, you know, a massive physical feat, we'll call off, you know, physical training for the day. And one of the guys said, well, I tell you what, I'll bet that I can do 200 pull-ups without getting off the bar. I'm like, 200. I said, that's a cool bet. What's the penalty? And you know, you don't want to get a penalty as a SEAL because they're not pretty. And I won't tell you what the penalty would have been, but so I sat there and watched him do 200 pull-ups without getting off the bar.
Wow. That's impressive.
And I was dumbfounded.
Huh. Yeah.
Unbelievable that people can do these things.
Yeah. Well, I read a book a while back called Outliers, and it talks about, you know, that 10,000 hours of, mm-hmm. you know, in order to be great at anything, you know, you were referencing that the 10,000 hours or the 10,000 mm-hmm. times. And it's true. When you think about it, like the most prolific athletes have been working on their craft since they were very small. And they've, you know, for whatever reason, they've just kept going and going and going. And, mm-hmm. you know, you can implement that into anything. I mean, you know, I mm-hmm. never thought I would ever be in radio, ever. And I'm mm-hmm. by no means, like, mastered it yet. But, mm-hmm. I mean, the more you do, the more you get comfortable. And it does. The more you practice, the better off you are. And even if you're not great at it, it just seems to become almost, you know, innate. Where before I was mm-hmm. terrified of public speaking, terrified. Mm-hmm. And through,
yeah.
you know, continuing
and
to
it's,
do
it's
it.
Also a, it's also
changed.
How, I guess the answer, I don't know if you're looking for an answer, but in having trained so many people, at first time you do something, the thing that you do is foreign to you. You know, even if you've never shot
yes.
a gun, the first time you shoot it, you're like, oh, man, that doesn't feel good. What is that? A trigger? What's a trigger? You know, oh, my gosh, it hurts. Or the scope hits you in the eye, and you end up trying to talk yourself out of doing it. And
right.
then as you keep doing it, the more you get to 10,000, closer to 10,000, the less
yeah.
the thing that you're doing shows up. So the
yeah.
more you shoot a gun, the less the gun shows up. And I remember when I was really good at shooting, I didn't even know the gun was there.
Yeah.
Now I pick up a gun and I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is this thing? Oh, because I've lost all those iterative trainings. And that's the idea of practice, is the thing becomes a part of you and you can't distinguish yourself from it anymore.
Yeah.
And you had,
well,
had 9,000 battles where you don't like it. It feels terrible. Oh, running is the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's muscle memory. And you know, even with your brain, if you're not maybe doing something physical, but doing something with your brain, that's muscle memory too. Like
you
keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. Yeah. So that's I think that's really inspiring. You're doing. I'm really excited to get the book and read it, and hopefully when you come out with the steps on the website, I definitely want to take a look at that. That's
well. When you get to
yeah.
lesson three, call me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So do I dare ask what lesson three is?
Yeah, lesson three is I wanted the kids to learn. You know, if you have a great idea, that you have to see it through no matter what comes up. So the challenge is to walk 24 hours without stopping for more than 10 minutes. And in the
wow.
process of doing that challenge, you will figure out inside of you what is important. And the only way to keep going is to, you have to talk yourself into it. And
wow.
We've had like 22 businesses do the 24-hour challenge.
Yeah.
And it's and when you decide to do it or not do it, it's a weird phenomenon. It's, you know, you're excited in the first quarter, and nothing's going on, and you're eating, and you know, you're stopping to rest not more than 10 minutes, and then in the middle, people start unraveling. They're like, oh, my God,
yeah.
I can't go another 20 hours. And then in the end, everything hurts, but you're like, you know, I could do whatever it takes to get the next 4 hours in. And that phenomenon of experiencing that, then when you face other challenges in your life, you're like, okay, I get it. I just need to keep doing this.
Yeah. Well, I had a similar situation. My very first time doing Milsim, and I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, that's like, the little BBs shooting at each other. But this was put on by a former military guy who spent 20 some odd years in the big army. And so he set it up very much like a military mission, and they starting to implement them as training sessions. And it was a 24-hour event. And I had never done anything like that in my life. And I mean, here I show up because, you know, the people that I'm around, they're actually wearing like real kits and stuff like that because they're real military. And so I show up at this Milsim event, like I borrowed one of my guy's full kit. I mean, I had like the plates in and everything, and everybody's looking at me like, you are a total like wacko. You think you're going to get through this thing wearing that? And, you know, I was told several times, you're going to run into walls. Just got to keep pushing yourself. And we were, you know, sorted up into teams, and we had like these various missions, and they had like the sound in an old abandoned nuclear facility that had never had any nuclear stuff in there. So there was no radiation or anything. So there was never any radioactive material there. So, I mean, and it was hot in the middle of Carolina in the summer, and, you know, we're all dressed in our fatigues and stuff like that, and literally pushed to do things because your team is depending on you. Like, I'm terrified of heights, and I crawled up an exterior ladder up 7 stories with my weapon and everything because I had to go and defend my sniper. So, and it turned out that, I mean, it was, let me tell you, I had blisters on top of blisters, and, you know, everybody's, you know, you can't really sleep, and we're eating beef jerky and, you know, running around all over the place like crazy people. And it was a lot of fun, but at a certain point when you haven't slept and you're exhausted and you're sweating and you've got blisters on top of blisters, it's like, oh, I don't think I can go on. And your team kind of encourages you to do that. And there's such a feeling of accomplishment. And I know it's nothing compared to what you guys face in the military on a daily basis, but it at least gave me that little glimpse into what it, you know, a small portion of what it must be like. And, you know, respect just grew leaps and bounds for what you guys have to go through. But yeah, I can.
Yeah,
and that was
yeah, that's, yeah, it's the same. It's the same. You just add or times 5, but it's the same experience.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not categorizing PTSD, but PTSD is when you don't have any relief and you get that day in and day out, and then your body and your mind detach from each other.
Yeah.
That's one aspect of it. Can you imagine just doing that for 6 or 7 months?
No.
You eventually go, I'm done. You know.
Yeah.
And but yeah, the other, not that you're talking about it, but the other side of that PTSD is the damage that you know, explosions do to your brain tissue.
Right.
And you know, can you imagine being in that environment and not processing it well because you have so many scars in your brain?
Yeah.
And then you imagine the guys coming back from that, and you know, and you know, you said you had appreciation. And you do. You have the same experience, and those guys are trying to process what you processed without, you know, full cognition of what happened because they've been in so many blast injuries and wires when you get back home. You just can't process it, and
right.
Now people are trying to help these guys, you know, overcome that, which I'm very proud that people are trying to help them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's so important. And a lot of people don't really realize, because I used to get to go up and spend some time on Range 37 at Fort Bragg. And, you know, you go into the shoot houses and just the flash bangs that are going on in there, those repeatedly, without you even having been in combat or maybe being subjected to an IED, those smaller blasts over time, it builds up the TBIs. And, you know, then you go out and you're deployed into combat, you know, a combat zone, and, you know, you have all of this other stuff going on. And you may not have been in one large explosion, but all of those smaller concussions over time build up, and people don't recognize that. They think that just because they weren't in like a major blast, they might not have a TBI. But I encourage all of the guys that I know that have been at that higher level where they've spent so much time in shoot houses and training and stuff like that, to go and get tested, because I've seen a couple guys that have never been through an IED, but because of their training and because of, you know, smaller explosions, they've had, you know, many built up over time, and it just eventually just, it is, it's a very harmful, you know, scar or wound on the brain. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, war is hell.
yeah, not fun. Yeah.
It's not pretty, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah. Well, so what are some of the things that you have coming up that we can look forward to, other than the what's going on with your website?
The only newness is we bought into a company called Primal Quest. An adventure racing company, and we're relaunching it this year. It's expedition level races, 500 to 700 miles.
Oh wow.
Real leadership and real endurance and real exposure to the elements over 5 to 10 days, and I find it extremely valuable, so we invested in it to help them, you know, figure out how to monetize and produce really exceptional events.
Yeah.
And I think this summer we're trying to partner with some other military organizations to help bring awareness to resiliency and traumatic brain injury. And we don't really have a firm date for that, because we're trying to get a better understanding of how we can actually help. And then just a lot of more of the same. I run ultra marathons, and I'm going to try to do that this summer, and also run a business, which is, makes it harder.
Right? Yeah, I've always found that mental exhaustion exhausts me way more than physical exhaustion.
Oh, yeah. So there's no doubt about it. Even psychologists will say mental exhaustion is harder to overcome than physical.
Yeah. Well, I'm so pleased that we were finally able to connect and have you come on the show. We've got, like, we're wrapping up here, so we've got about maybe 3 more minutes. If you could impart one message on the listeners, what would that be?
The most important thing in human life is to learn the skill of not giving up on yourself.
Yeah.
And if you spend a lot of time working on that skill, your life will be transformed.
That's incredible.
I did pretty good there. That's my pitch. That's pretty cool.
Okay, and then one more time, where can everybody go to find out more information?
Adamantine Alliance is the name of our company. And you can search that on the web, and you can read Unbreakable, A Navy SEAL's Way of Life, and you can pick that up at Barnes & Noble or order it on Amazon.
Perfect. Well, I am going to go order my book today, and hopefully we'll run into each other at some point so I can get you to sign it. But
sure.
I'd love to maybe have you come back on the show, you know, sometime in the near future, and, you know, after I get through reading the book, and, you know, when the program comes out on the website, maybe just kind of touch base and go back through some of that, the learning lessons that sure. you're putting out there. I would absolutely love that.
Well, thanks, Jen, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Tom, for both, you know, your service to this country and to everything that you're doing to give back to the community. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks to everybody, and have a great day.
Thanks.
For tuning in tonight, guys, thank you to my guests, Mark Henshaw and Tom Shea, for coming on the show. Please tune in next week. We're going to have a really cool show for Super Tuesday. We've got Carl Higbee calling in to talk about Super Tuesday and the polls. We've got a very special guest that may be dropping by the studio, which I'm really, really excited for, but we'll keep that one on the hook until next week. And then we have, of course, the incredible Ricky Schroeder, producer, actor extraordinaire, coming on to talk about his project, My Fighting Season. And then we have the amazing Jason Redman coming on to talk about some of the projects that he's working on. So next week is going to be a kick-ass show, folks. Please do tune in every Tuesday night, 8:10 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to tune in on Wednesday morning for Don U-Turn Marsh and All About Vets every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Central. Thanks so much and have a great week.